friends, this is Christine Hoover from GraceCoversMe.com, and I want to welcome you to the By Faith podcast, where each week this season, I'm talking to someone who is walking forward by faith, many of them through difficult circumstances. We're asking the question, how does God meet us in our deepest, darkest pain, and how does He turn that pain into beauty? My guest on the show today shares a story that is fraught with pain and uncertainty, but still, despite what she went through, the truth of God carried her through. Her name is Rachel Welcher. She is a teacher and a poet. And in our conversation today, Rachel shares about her first marriage that ended in divorce. What Rachel shares is applicable to both those who are on the brink of divorce and those who want to minister to women in difficult marriages. I know you'll find her so full of wisdom, because I did as we talked. And my prayer is that as we listen to Rachel's story, we'd grow in empathy for others and also cling tighter to the God who never leaves us. So friends, here is my conversation with Rachel. Thank you, Rachel Welcher, for joining me on my podcast. I'm so glad to have you.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I have followed you for a while on Twitter, and I just have always resonated with your writing. I've written some of your articles, and did I say written or read?
Read, yeah.
I have read some of your articles through TGC and just things that you've linked to on Twitter, and I value your words and the way that
you
communicate. So I wanted to invite you on today to hear more of your story and just to get to ask you questions about that. But before we do that, I would just love for you a chance to introduce yourself and tell us about you, your family, and your ministry currently.
Sure. Yeah. I'm currently in Iowa with my husband, Evan Welcher. He's a pastor, and we are newlyweds. We're just 6 months into marriage, learning how to minister together and how to be married after, it's a remarriage for both of us. He lost his wife to cancer. I'm divorced. And so we are learning what it means to trust God and to love another person. And it's been better than I ever imagined and harder as marriage goes, right?
Yeah.
Better and harder always.
That would be a whole nother podcast we could have a conversation about. Marrying into the ministry, somebody who's been doing it, and then you join them.
Exactly. Yes. Ah. But it's been wonderful. And I'm a pastor's daughter. So I did watch my mom do the pastor's wife thing and never thought I'd be one, but I am. And, you know, praise God. I hope He equips me. I grew up in California. I got my bachelor's degree in writing. And then after my divorce, I went back to grad school at age 30, and I just finished at the University of St. Andrews with a degree in Bible in the Contemporary World, and it was just an incredible program, so thought-provoking. I think it grew me as a writer, a thinker, and just the way I interact with theology. So I've been a high school English teacher for 10 years, and the last couple of years I've taken time off from that to write. So writing is my true passion, and I'm excited that God's giving me more time for that lately.
Did you get to live in Scotland for this?
So I did this distance learning program where you get to go to Scotland for a week at the beginning of each semester. So it's this perfect program where you get to meet your classmates, you get to walk around St. Andrews, which is on the ocean, castles crumbling into the sea as you walk to class. Unbelievable.
Exactly how we picture it in our
heads, right? It's like a storybook. And then I was able to return home and work and do my school from coffee shops. And I finished my degree with Evan, you know, here in Iowa. And he was very patient and supportive. So,
so what are you writing? You took time off to write. What are you writing?
Well, I was writing my master's thesis, and I was writing about purity culture. So that's what I've been studying for the last 7 months. But it's only been a few weeks that I've been done and am starting to think about what I'll write next. So I'm a poet. I've got one book of poetry, but I'm thinking about writing a book with Evan about our story, just because there's so much unique loss on either side and incredible mercy and joy. Mm-hmm. So we're thinking about writing something together, just telling our story so that people can be encouraged and feel less alone and glorify God with us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope you do. I would love to read that.
Oh, great.
Well, I only know a little bit of your story from what you've written. I've read specifically two articles that this is why I wanted to talk to you was for TGC. And one was called When the Unbeliever Departs, and the other one was The Aftermath of When the Unbeliever Departs. So I would love for you to tell us your story. You've mentioned divorce already. So that's what we want to talk about today. What happened in your life that led to your divorce?
Well, so I, like I said, I grew up as a pastor's kid and I read all the books and my parents just did a wonderful job equipping me in the word. And I grew up in the church. I went to a Bible college, the Master's College in Southern California, and I met my would-be husband there. And we were friends for years. And then when we started dating, we dated for years. And I think we were engaged 6 months. We were each other's, he was my first kiss. And I tried to do everything by the books. I tried to follow all the quote unquote rules of dating and, you know, be very wise and cautious. And so we entered into our marriage just with so much joy. And we were married for 5 years. But about 4 years into our marriage, he surprised me by telling me he was doubting his faith. And that following year was the hardest year of my life.
I would imagine.
Yeah. So he started to draw away from the church, from the gospel, and of course from our marriage. And divorce was just this looming, I don't want to say threat, because he wasn't threatening me with it, but it was a looming possibility every day that he might decide that we were just too different now. And I wanted, you know, I said, I'm not going anywhere. We can make this work. But he eventually decided that we were too different now that he no longer believed that Jesus was Lord. And so about around year five, he filed for divorce. And it was just the whole year was kind of it was like being in a dream because I didn't prepare for that. And it felt, I don't know how it felt. It's always hard to describe. It was very isolating because I didn't want to tell his story that he wasn't ready to tell. And yet I was suffering through it too. And so I'd go to church and just didn't know how to be honest with people because I couldn't be open. I eventually ended up going to a different church because I couldn't go to the one I was going to alone. People would have asked. And it was a rough year. I was teaching full time and trying to minister to my students. And so I just compartmentalized a lot. Mm-hmm. And when he finally filed for divorce, I accepted it pretty immediately just because after a year of wondering, I said, okay, so this is what is happening. And I hadn't really grieved until after I moved home. I moved back in with my parents in California. And that's when I couldn't compartmentalize anymore. I had to deal with the fact that, you know, my marriage was over. And that was a hard year too, but it was also a year of healing. So
was it in that moment that he came to you and said, I'm doubting my faith? Was that the moment that the idea of divorce also came up, or that came later?
You know, it's hard for me to remember when the word first popped up, but I know that it was never on my radar. And, you know, I was taught, we both grew up in churches that taught that you don't leave a back door open. When you commit to someone, divorce can't be an option, because if it's an option, then you'll go to it, you know, when times get tough. And he believed that too. But when his faith changed, it also changed the way he viewed marriage.
Hmm.
And that was so hard for me, because I had to adjust to these new beliefs in my spouse and to the fact that he was contemplating something that I found unthinkable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I knew it happened to a lot of people I knew and loved, but you never think it's going to happen to you. And anyone who knew us, everyone who did know us was shocked, because he had always been, showed seeming fruits of salvation and, you know, a good husband, faithful to church. and so and loved me. So it was a shock to everyone, and I think it seemed like it was a shock to him too. He grieved a lot. So I don't know exactly when it became a reality. Shortly after he started doubting, he brought up the fact that he might not be able to stay with someone who believes so differently, that he would stop respecting my beliefs, and that would have an impact on our love. So it became something where every morning when I woke up for about 8 months, I wasn't sure if my husband was going to leave me, because he was deciding for about 8 months. And I would say that was one of the hardest things I've ever been through. It felt unintentional on his part, but it felt like torture to me.
Absolutely.
So
you knew he was considering it. So I would imagine there would be a lot of thoughts of, well, if I just did the right thing in this moment, if I said the right thing in this moment, I can convince him to stay in the marriage. So how do you know? And I also think of 1 Peter, where it's saying to wives, I've had a friend who had an unbelieving husband, and she would say, that feels like pressure to me when people bring up 1 Peter and say, if you do these things right in this moment, that you can convince your husband, you can change his heart.
Right.
Did you feel some of that tension or temptation to believe it was up to you to convince him?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I tried playing savior for sure. And I just, what I wanted to do was I wanted to be able to come up with all the answers he needed to, help him deal with his doubts. And so he was reading all these books about different things, and I tried to join him in that. He asked me to, and I tried to join him and interact, and it wasn't working. He was always better at winning arguments, and I wasn't able to prove anything to him in a way that would change what he believed. And so it became something where I just started reading my Bible quietly, in the corner, and realized that I wasn't going to be able to change his mind, that was something that only the Holy Spirit could do. Mm-hmm. But it was hard. I still think some days, oh man, now I have an answer to that question. Mm-hmm. I wish I could go back in time. And now, but that's not, we know that that's not true, because people saw Jesus face to face when he was here on earth, and they still didn't believe. And so we obviously have to remember that we are not saviors. We can be a light, but we can't save anyone. But that's so hard when it's the person you love the most in the world and you want to rescue them. Yeah. And so it was hard. And I do still struggle with some false guilt about not having all the answers, not being as knowledgeable theologically as I wish I was. And I think I've become more knowledgeable since. And then, you look back and you just say, oh, I wish this version of me could have been the one convincing them. But that's not how it works. Mm-hmm. And so.
Well, you write about that time. You say, I didn't know whether to focus on being a wife or to prepare for inconceivable heartache. So can you explain what that felt like for you, and how you wrestled in your thinking in that time?
Oh man, I'm an all or nothing person. And so it was so hard to be in this space where I shouldn't say I wasn't allowed, but it didn't benefit our marriage for me to protect myself emotionally from him, to put up a wall.
Yeah.
And yet this looming potential for divorce made me want to just shut down and protect myself, because I knew that hurt was on its way. But a friend told me, she said, you won't ever regret loving him too much during this time. You won't regret showing him too much love, but you might look back and regret withholding love in order to protect yourself. And so that advice was very formative during that year, those 8 months specifically, where I really wanted to step back and just start to almost prepare myself for the hurt that might come. But instead, God helped me to be in the moment and to try to love him each day. I did it very imperfectly. I was not a perfect wife at all. But I tried to continue to show him love, even though I knew he might divorce me tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And there's no way I did that in my flesh. It absolutely was the Holy Spirit. But it was so hard to to be in that in-between. And I know a lot of women and men who've written me about my articles who have shared that they're still in that place where their spouse is falling away or has abandoned the faith, and they don't know if they're going to stay together or not. And so it's just so hard to know what to do with your heart. But my advice to anyone in that situation is, while you're married, your heart's in your marriage. And I say that from a place knowing how hard it is to have your heart in a marriage where you could be hurt at any moment at a catastrophic level. And so it's not easy, but you're not going to regret staying true to your vows while you're in your marriage, whether it ends or it continues. You're not going to regret obeying God.
Well, and when you spoke earlier about that, this was his story to tell. He was going through this doubting,
right,
and you didn't feel free to share that.
Right.
So that is, it seems like a very difficult type of suffering that is private.
Right.
I'm sure you did tell some people what you were going through.
I did. I had a friend who I told my husband, I said, I have to talk to someone. So this is the person I'm going to pick. Are you okay with that? He said, okay. And so she bore so many of my burdens that year. She knows who she is. And it wasn't until after the divorce that I was able to open up with people and actually receive some comfort. During that process, it was very, very lonely. But I will say that the small acts of kindness that people showed me, people who didn't necessarily know what was going on, but they could tell something was wrong, just their presence, their love, it meant the world to me, because no one could fix what I was going through. You know, no one could change what was happening. And so I didn't need anyone to come alongside and, you know, try to tell me what to do. I mean, I definitely was seeking advice and wisdom, but I couldn't control what my husband decided to do. So I needed people who would just love me in the mess of it.
Let's talk about this in a bigger picture. For one, I just want to confess to you that I have been nervous about this interview.
Oh, really?
Because divorce is an issue that we as the church, we talk about it in very black and white terms.
Yeah.
And because we know and we're clear, and you would agree that God hates divorce.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
But divorce happens.
Right.
And so I think sometimes we don't know how to approach this subject. We don't know how to think about it. It under that umbrella of, this is not something that God would want, that it happens. And so can you speak to that, of how the church doesn't fully understand, from someone who's experienced it, what would you want the church to know or understand?
Oh man, that is such a hard question. And I will admit right now that I think I'm still thinking through all the nuances in scripture when it comes to divorce. You know, there's conversations going on right now about whether or not abuse is the same thing as being abandoned, and what, you know, when divorce is biblically permitted. And it's very complicated theologically. But what I would say from just being someone who's been through a divorce is that it is so easy to make snap judgments when you hear that someone's been divorced. And divorce is it's not black and white. The people I know who are going through it or who've been through it, there are so many aspects of what they went through that aren't directly addressed in scripture, just like so much of what we go through in our lives. And so you have to wrestle with scripture, and you wrestle with God, ask him to give you wisdom, and you plead. And so just, I would ask the church to approach those who've been divorced with empathy and compassion. Maybe they are in sin. Maybe they did disobey God. That definitely happens. But to approach them with a listening heart, to hear their story first and to pray with them, to acknowledge that even if they sinned in their divorce, that they're broken because of it. And if they're in church, hopefully it's because they want to draw near to God. And so anyone in your church who's been through divorce, they're walking around with brokenness in them, whether through sin or they've been sinned against or both. Because, you know, we know if you're married, you know that any fight you get in is rarely the fault of just one person. Mm-hmm. So in my story, my husband left me. He left me, and I didn't have a choice in terms of, I didn't believe that I should stop him. I read that passage in, I think it's 1 Corinthians or maybe it's 2nd, that, you know, you do let the unbeliever depart and you stay with them if they want to stay. And so I did believe that I kind of had to just put my hands up and say, God, your will be done. So in that sense, I would say I don't believe that I sinned in my divorce, but I'm walking around broken because of it. And I'm also walking around with a big D on my chest sometimes, especially because I write about it. Mm-hmm. And as a result, people will decide, they'll make judgments. And there were even some comments on my TGC posts. I think they've turned off comments now, which I appreciate, but mm-hmm. there were some comments about people telling me, you know, you should have done more to save him. And you're being cavalier about his loss of faith, just making these judgments about things that broke my heart. And, you know, I did try. I tried in my humanness to be a light to him, and it didn't work. And so to have people say that I didn't do enough is one of the most hurtful things, and a reason that we shouldn't read. Barnabas Piper told me, don't read the comment section of your articles. That was very wise advice. But I think divorce is this humiliating subject that is so wrought with misunderstandings and snap judgments. And so it's not that, I'm not trying to say that the people in your church who are divorced are all sinless. That's not what I'm saying, but please approach them with compassion, understanding that they're walking around with a hole in their chest. Mm-hmm. And regardless of how it happened, they need your love and they need your prayers and they need you to listen to their story before informing them about what you think. And so I think we need to leave room for people's stories.
Mm-hmm. It seems like that the way you're speaking reminds me of things in my own life that I feel ashamed of. Mm. Even if it's a circumstance that I didn't choose,
right?
Something about it that feels like it's always a little bit of an open wound, and I feel very sensitive about it.
Yes.
And I sometimes want to hide it from view, or I don't want everybody to have access to that.
And right.
So is that something that you have wrestled with, shame related to this, even though you didn't choose it?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, I remember returning home to the church I grew up in, where my father pastors in California. And I returned home, and the last time they'd really seen me was when they threw me a wedding. Mm. 5 years before. And I mean, I'd visited, but the last they knew, I was in this good, godly marriage. And so then to return home broken, even though, again, I didn't feel like it was the direct result of my sin or disobedience, it did feel humiliating. And I remember co-leading a Bible study just a few months later, which I thought, oh Lord, please don't ask me to do this. But the lady really really wanted me to co-lead it with her. And the first night she asked me to introduce myself, and I didn't get past maybe two words. It was so embarrassing. I just broke down, because the reason why I was there, the reason why I moved home, was because of divorce. That was the reason. So for months, when people would ask me, you know, what I was doing home, they were pushing this wound, not intentionally. It's interesting too, because when you're grieving the first stages of grief, it feels like your identity is wrapped up in your pain. And so I started school, and I was in Scotland, and I was meeting my classmates from all over the world. And that first semester, when people would ask me about myself, I felt like I was lying if I didn't tell them that I'd just been divorced. It was this weird thing. I mean, I didn't owe anyone anything, but I felt like it was what defined me at that time. And so I have this classmate, this friend, and he said that by year two, he saw me maybe a year and a half later in Scotland. We were there for our study week, and he asked me how I was doing, and I updated him on my life, and I'd had a book published and some other exciting things. And he said, you know, when I met you, you were Rachel who is divorced, and now you are Rachel and so many other things. Mm. And so that was really healing to hear, because when you're first going through it, you feel like it's going to define you forever, mm-hmm. that you are just going to have that big D on your chest or whatever letter of whatever you're suffering. But it's true that there are seasons in our life. Ecclesiastes is, it's true. There are times that we mourn, but we do heal. And it doesn't mean that the wound ever completely heals, but healing does happen. And mm-hmm. I am in such a different place now than I was 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I would love to hear how God met you in that pain. You're in that, those 8 months, you're mm-hmm. you're in the time when the divorce is coming through. Mm-hmm. How is God meeting you in that pain? And what are some of the things that he's spoke to you?
Mm, that's such a good question. I had just finished studying the book of Job for 2 years. And I think it was 2 days later, after I'd finished writing, I wrote an essay on every chapter of Job. I don't know what possessed me to do that.
Wow.
Yeah, that's still sitting in my computer. Just, it's hard to touch it, but maybe one day I'll pull it out again. But I'd done it just as this personal study and writing exercise. And so for 2 years, steeped in the book of Job. And then about 2 days later, after I finished, my husband told me, you know, this bombshell. And so interesting that God would have me in the book of Job before the greatest trial of my life. As a result, I knew that God loved me in my pain. I did not struggle once with thinking that he had stopped loving me. And that's not to say, oh, I'm so great. I think that that's something a lot of people struggle with in their trials. But it was just that I just read about how Job went through all these horrendous things. And I knew that God was watching all of it, right? And he called Job a righteous servant, and he loved Job through it. And even though Job didn't really understand, and God never told him why, we as readers get to see that God loved Job through it all. And just that image of Jesus, I think the most comforting thing to me in all of this has been the image of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, asking God to take the cup from him. And God saying no to his own son. I think realizing that God doesn't just say no to us when we sometimes ask him to deliver us from pain or trials. He said no to his own son. And we know he loves Jesus, right? He is Jesus. So it just to know that Jesus really does get it, mm-hmm. that God is so well acquainted with our pain and our grief, and he can allow us to suffer and love us at the same time. And I think that's something that every Christian at some point has to grapple with. It's the problem of pain, the problem of evil. How is God good and this and my pain? And so that's where he's met me, is he's shown me that even when I don't understand, even when it doesn't all become this story I can wrap up with a bow, I know he loves me. Because he loved Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Mm-hmm. What about friends? You mentioned the friend who said you won't regret loving mm-hmm. him. What other truths did people speak to you in that time? And when I say that time, I mean the whole scope, the past 3 years. Mm-hmm. What are some of the truths that people have spoken to you that have really ministered to you and helped you?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think. I feel like it's been more acts of mercy and service that have spoken that love to me, because people haven't really known what to say to me.
Yeah.
It's really hard to know what to say to someone who's going through a divorce, because you know, you weren't there. You don't know all the details of it. As you mentioned, divorce is this sort of humiliating topic, but the friends who would just send me a care package in the mail and tell me they were praying, or the people who really, the friends who said, it's okay that you have nothing to give me right now. Because I just feel like for a year, all I was ever able to text my friends was, this hurts.
Yeah.
And I didn't have anything in me to give. And I felt like a bad friend. But what they gave me in return was the gift of loving me unconditionally and sticking with me, even when I wasn't at my best. You know, grief just really... grief knocks us out, you know? And so I'm trying to think as far as wisdom. I mean, people came alongside me and reminded me of who God is for me. And I think also people have helped me deal with some of the shame and false guilt. Mm-hmm. They've said things like, and it's taken years. I just recently, this last year, have started seeing a Christian counselor. I've just seen her a couple times, but it's been so helpful because just in her asking me questions and hearing my responses out loud, I've realized that there's still guilt that I've carried that's not mine. And we can accept God's forgiveness for our own sins, but we cannot accept God's forgiveness for the sins of others because they're not ours. And so when you carry this false guilt and you keep saying, well, this was my fault when it wasn't, that's actually not helpful to the Christian life because we can't be forgiven of of something that we didn't do. And so I think just realizing that it's okay to speak truth, that I remember my counselor asked me, do you believe that what you went through was trauma? And I couldn't say yes, because I felt like, well, no, people have been through much harder things. I can't call this trauma. And she said, well, trauma is when your choice is taken from you. Hmm. And I said, well, then, yeah, it was. It was trauma for me. And just even just admitting that it was traumatic, that I feel like I've been wounded. Mm-hmm. Even if my ex-husband didn't mean to hurt me, which I don't think he did, feeling the freedom to say he did hurt me and it was wrong, that is something I didn't have the bravery to say for about the first 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that we as a church tend to, or I wouldn't say tend, but that we can perpetuate this kind of false guilt because we are sending wrong messages about?
Yes.
What can you elaborate on that?
Well, okay. So in studying purity culture for my master's thesis, my study was how some purity culture messages, I'm talking books from the late 90s, early 2000s on dating, romance, sexual purity. Those books have some messages in them that can be really damaging to victims of sexual abuse. So that was my thesis topic. But as I was studying, rereading these books and examining them, and they have lots of good stuff in them, but some of the really damaging messages, they're not just for victims of abuse, but they're messages that seem to imply that if you do things the right way, you will have a good marriage. If you do things the right way, divorce will not ever be a reality. And so these false promises really have a damaging effect for someone like me, because my only response can be, okay, I must have failed somehow. What didn't I check off my list? And this question, and I've had so many people ask me, and I'm not trying to heap guilt on those who've asked, but the people who ask me, well, what were the red flags when you were dating? I get that question constantly. And I totally understand why people ask me that. They want to avoid the pain that I went through.
Right.
However, what that says to me is, oh, so you knew, but you still married him. And that's not true. That is not true at all. I didn't know. And I tried my best. And it still happened. And so what I would tell those people is that, so purity culture says, these Christian books say, it's basically the prosperity gospel,
yes,
right? They say, if you do these things, you will be blessed. Well, the truth is we know that you can do all those things and God's love for us and his will for us could be suffering and loss and divorce. He can hate divorce and it's still somehow under his sovereign will. I don't understand how that works theologically, but I know it's true. And it's really hard for people to accept.
Yes.
But when people are talking to me, I can tell what they believe theologically about these issues based on the questions they ask me.
Yes. That is so good that the way you brought that up. This is something I talk about in my book, Searching for Spring, is that we tend to put words into Jesus's mouth that he didn't say.
Yes.
And it's that exact idea that if I do these things that I can avoid suffering, if I do all the things right, mm-hmm. God will bless me.
Right.
And really Jesus said the opposite. And
exactly.
He didn't say do these things and you'll suffer. Mm-hmm. But he said, in this world you will have trouble. And we tend to think we can avoid that somehow.
Right.
I'm surprised by it. And I think that we have this idea in relation to so many things that, well, it must be Rachel's fault, you know?
Right.
If she would have just done the right things, that this wouldn't mm-hmm. be the case. And we have a hard time believing that God allows suffering for us.
Right. We're always trying to explain away God plus suffering. Always. And we get really creative. And I do this too. But the truth is we don't date right and pursue wisdom in who we marry so that we will get everything we ever wanted. We do it because we love God and we do it out of obedience. And I would say to singles listening to this, I cannot promise you that your story won't be, that your story won't be like mine. I can't promise anyone that. They can do all the right things, but I can promise you that if you obey God, you will be blessed, because even if you're suffering and you're crying on the bathroom floor, as I did so many nights, I was blessed because God was near to me. And I think that, yeah, I think you're exactly right that we try to figure out a way to avoid this promise that Jesus gave us that we will suffer. Mm-hmm. And so I would still tell people to follow wisdom and advice when they're dating and to be very, you know, to be cautious about who they marry. Of course, I even wrote an article about that for TGC. I think it's called Before You Marry, Question Your Relationship, where I try to answer the question of what were the red flags. There weren't any, but these are the things that I listed that I could think of to ask before you get married. But even if you do all those things that I said, it doesn't mean that you won't end up divorced mm-hmm. or hurt.
Yes. We like to write our own promises as if God said them, but there are promises that are sure that right. take us yes. through these things. So what are the promises now that you realize, oh, that's the promise that I can hold on to, and it can take me through, you yes. know, divorce happens again.
Right.
This promise right. takes me through.
Right. Oh, and goodness, that if divorce happens again, it's so hard to even say that out loud, but to take my worst fear, you know, the worst fear is experiencing the trauma you have before again. His steadfast love endures forever. That's the promise that I cling to every day, because we are in constant, we change, we hurt each other. Mm-hmm. That's what we do as people and as sinners. And so you cannot put your trust in man, but you can put your trust in God. And the fact that God loves me no matter what I've done or where I'm at, the fact that his patience won't run out. Those are the promises that I cling to when people disappoint me or when the world feels like it's crashing in. Mm-hmm.
That's so good. So how has this changed the way that you minister to other people?
I think I talk less and I hug more. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to be as judgmental when you've been through something like this. I mean, I still, of course, struggle with making snap judgments. Of course, we all do. But it's really increased my empathy. And instead of immediately going to advice, giving people advice, which was definitely my go-to growing up and even in college and after that, I try to listen first because that's what I wanted people to do for me.
Mm-hmm. Are you getting responses from things that you've written from people who are going through the same thing?
Yes. And so many that it's overwhelming to me to the point where I wish I had more hours in a day so that I could come alongside these people more than just a few responses on Facebook Messenger or, you know, Twitter direct message. But what I try to do is when people write me, I talk to them for a little bit and then I encourage them to confide in someone in their local body because people feel more free to tell me what's going on because they've read my story, and that makes complete sense. And that's the first step, is reaching out and telling someone. But what we need in our pain is people who are actually living life with us to know what's going on. I do think in this age of the internet, it's so easy to reach out to people who are a little bit distanced from us.
Yeah.
It feels safer to talk to them. And so I do get a lot of that, and I don't blame those people at all because I've done the same thing. But what's really hard and takes a lot of bravery is to talk to a few people in your actual church mm-hmm. who see you and know you and can check up on you. And that's the thing. So I would say at least once a week, I get a message from someone who went through the same thing as me mm-hmm. or who's in that marriage right now. And my heart just breaks and I just stop and pray for them. And I can't answer all their questions. I don't always know. I can't tell them what to do. You know, a lot of times they just want me to tell them, and I just encourage them to keep obeying God and trusting Him regardless of what happens.
Mm-hmm. What is maybe the number one question that you get from people?
Probably just how do I live with this? The people who write me tend to be in marriage, still in their marriage, and in that place of being in limbo, not being sure if the marriage is going to end or not. And so their question is, how do I practice marriage in this limbo, which is, I think, the hardest thing. And that's where that advice from my friend comes back into play, which is just that as far as it depends on you, be at peace with your spouse as much as you can, show them love, whatever that looks like in your specific circumstance. And you're not going to regret that. You're not going to regret showing too much love. Mm-hmm. And so, and again, I would just, the caveat here would be that if it's an abusive situation, I would give very different advice, and you definitely need to remove yourself from the situation so you're safe. But when it comes to just being in a difficult marriage with a spouse who's dealing with doubt, you know, they're suffering too. And so to just love them as much as you can, but to also acknowledge that we're limited. We are not God. We cannot save. And so to take that pressure off, that's what I try to tell some of these men and women, is just remember that it is not your job to save them. It is your job to love them.
Mm-hmm. How can we as Christians, as the church, be a place that's safe for those people who are messaging you? How can we be safe people for them to come and share that information?
Wow, that's a great question. I think it starts with the way we talk about issues like divorce out loud, because, and I know I've heard this argument from people who've gone through different trials, that they'll listen to what the church is saying about these topics. And if the church is making jokes, if congregants are treating the subject lightly, or they're assuming that everyone who's divorced, for example, falls into the same category, you are not going to want to bring up your pain with those people. And so it starts with just how we talk about things in front of other church members. And I think the other thing I would say is that being willing to meet one-on-one with people in your church is really important, because someone who's going through what I went through is not going to want to probably share it in a Bible study.
Right.
You know, they might, but they're probably going to want to meet one-on-one and have the privacy of that direct conversation. And they're probably going to choose just a few people. So to be someone who's willing to take time out of your schedule to have coffee with someone from church, I think that's huge. I think that's where a lot of discipleship takes place, is those coffee dates or whatever you drink.
I love how you talked about the way we talk about things, because as a pastor's wife myself, I am privy to sometimes knowing people's stories that other people don't know. And there are times in groups where I just think, please, I'm thinking as someone's talking, please be careful what you're saying, because I always think that whatever issue we're talking about, there is one person at least in the church, in the group, who has experienced that, whether you know it or not. And so always trying to be careful of talking about an issue, not as it's an out there issue, but as it's an in here issue.
Yes.
And being sensitive to that is so important.
Yes, absolutely.
One last question is just about the remarriage. I would want to know, were you afraid to get married again? And how are you walking forward by faith, believing and trusting God? You just said that once something has happened, it becomes your greatest fear that it's going to happen again. So how are you moving into this new marriage, trusting God?
Oh man, the answer to was I afraid to get remarried is yes, 100%. And I'm married and I'm still scared. And it has nothing to do, I married this wonderful man named Evan, and it has nothing to do with him. My fears are completely the result of what happened in the past, which is something that he shows me a lot of patience with. But yes, I struggle with fear even to this day. And I think it will take time, because new joy, you have this new joy, and lurking behind it is the worry that it's going to end soon, or that it's just temporary because that's what happened before. And so one of the toughest things for me is trusting God enough to enjoy his good gifts that are in front of me right now without worrying about future trials. That is so hard for me, but my husband is so good at that, and he lost everything as well. And so he knows what it's like to lose a spouse, and he is able to, and he encourages me to live in the day that God has given me and not in tomorrow, because it's true that, and you know, he lost his wife to cancer. So his fear is that he would lose me. And so we both have a lot of fear, and yet what we're trying to do together is to just to rejoice in the goodness of God and to not live in this way where we're always bracing ourselves for the next trial, because the truth is you cannot prepare yourself adequately for the trials that are ahead, and he will give you the grace in that moment. And so that's something I'm learning, is just how to enjoy joy and not let what could be and what could happen, you know, distract me from the kindness. And this new marriage is just such a kindness. If anyone follows me on social media, they're probably so annoyed by now by all the pictures and stuff. We're so in love, and it doesn't mean it's easy. I mean, again, if you know our stories, you can imagine the brokenness and the things that we have to deal with. But God has shown us more kindness than we ever thought we were going to see this side of heaven after what we've been through.
Mm-hmm. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
And I'm thankful for you sharing your story. I know that probably invites some thoughts.
Sure.
Online. Yeah. But I'm grateful for that. And I would love it if you wrote this down in a book.
That's really encouraging. Thank you. Well, we're praying about it, so I'll let you know for sure.
Okay. Okay, good. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you for being willing to address this topic. I really appreciate you having me on.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Rachel. You'll definitely want to read the articles we mentioned in the podcast, so I've linked to them in the show notes below. There, you'll also find links to where you can connect with Rachel and let her know what you learned from her in today's episode. I'd also love to hear your thoughts. I've enjoyed this season of conversation so much, and it would make me so happy to know what it's meant to you. You can find me online at gracecoversme.com or on Instagram at ChristineHoover98. I want to say thank you for listening to By Faith and for those who've chosen to support my work through my Patreon page. I hope you'll join me next week as I chat with my friend, Jason Dusing, about everyday hope and practical ways we can set our minds on our true anchoring hope. Until then, friends, have a great day and keep walking forward by faith.